Welcome to the podcast with me, your host, Dr. Deborah Durst, and I have a special guest with me today. I have had him on before, but he is back for more, and we're going to talk about injuries and how to repair quicker and faster, and it's Dr. Edwin Spencer.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Deborah. Thanks for having me again, and so I'm an orthopedic surgeon specializing in shoulder and elbow surgery here in Knoxville. And excited about the topic, because I've been talking more and more about nutrition and learning more and more about nutrition and what we can do to get our patients kind of ready for surgery. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've found is that the general surgeons, especially the abdominal surgeons and the thoracic surgeons, really seem to be ahead of us in this. And I think it's probably because a lot of their patients enter into surgery already malnourished, mm-hmm. and they're looking for ways to make sure that their patients that are coming in, sounds like about a third of them are malnourished, that they get as good as they can get before their big abdominal surgery, just to prevent complications. And a lot of medicine, as you know, is a little bit more reactive. Mm-hmm. We see a problem and we react to it, and we're already on our heels, as opposed to being on our toes and proactively getting patients mm-hmm. as ready for surgery as they can be. Because surgery is a big stressor. And I mean, it's as big a stressor as running a marathon. So you would get ready for a marathon, right? Yeah. You're going to work out and you're going to nutritionally get yourself right. Why not do that for surgery?
But then I feel like a lot of the general surgery and general surgery patients probably don't come in with the time frame to prep for a surgery, because a lot of that can be like an emergency or even an unexpected, acute appendicitis, but they come in and they're unhealthy, you know, so sometimes they don't get that. But you do get a chance most of the time to prep some patients for better healing and better entry into surgery.
Right. A lot of our surgeries are elective surgeries, whether it's a knee replacement or a rotator cuff repair, mm-hmm. ACL reconstruction, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We do have that benefit of getting those patients earlier and getting them prepped up for surgery. Now, trauma is a different situation. So
correct.
If you end up having
a
car wreck, fracture, what have you, you know, we don't have that luxury at that point. But we can still at least postoperatively start things aggressively as we can to nutritionally maximize their ability to heal.
When I think when we're talking right now, a lot of people are looking for, if they're injured, you know, how can they prep for that injury, whether they need surgery or not? You know, how can they heal that injury faster? And so when you're talking about nutrition, what are some things that you look at in those patients that do come to you with, you know, an ability to have some time while they're repairing and recovering, or before surgery? Like, what are some things that you would look at nutritionally?
So nutritionally, what we want to do is maximize our protein intake. And so when you're talking about a high protein diet, that's going to be somewhere around 1.2 to 1.5 grams per kilogram.
Okay.
Sometimes you can round that up to like a gram per pound, but you want to be able to take in a high protein diet. And if you kind of look at, you know, how much protein that's going to take, chicken breast is like 10 to 12 grams.
A lot of protein, yeah.
Yeah, and eggs like 7 grams. And so if you're going to try to take in that kind of protein, you're going to need to supplement that with either a whey isolate, a whey casein isolate, collagen peptides, things like that you can put into like a smoothie and take that either in the morning or maybe even the evening too.
Do you do like free amino acids or any amino acids along with that?
That would be fantastic. That's kind of the next level of stuff that goes along with peptides. That's where you come in. We send patients over to you that want to go to that next level, that are doing a little bit more than just the high protein diet, doing a little bit more than just the BCAAs, doing a little bit, which
or
is the branched
doing
chain
already
amino.
What they can.
Right.
To repair.
Right.
You know, of the right mindset, because you know, a lot of patients do. They want to know what they can do at home to get better without intervening with other things. But so high protein and a lot of it and actually supplements with it. Do you do blood tests, or would you recommend it at that point, or do you kind of wait until they're ready to take it to the next level?
If someone is, so if we're prepping someone for surgery, for an elective surgery, and it looks like they may be malnourished, then what we'll do, or what I'll do, is get an albumin level. And typically if their albumin level is less than 3, that's a metric that we know from the general surgery patient population that we need to supplement that.
Okay.
You can actually be malnourished and not look like you're malnourished. And so we need to be aware of that. But also vitamin D level is critically important. 60 to 70% of people are low in vitamin D. So checking vitamin D levels, supplementing that, sometimes that requires IV vitamin D. Sometimes it's just oral vitamin D. But if you've got 4 to 6 weeks to get ready, it is super important to do that, because vitamin D not only is important in bone health, it's important from an immunologic standpoint. So as we talked about before, B cells and T cells both have vitamin D receptors on them. It's critically important.
Immune support is huge with that.
Yeah.
But it sounds as if even like vitamin D levels at the time of surgery are very important. And I really didn't know that until we started to look at this a little bit more. How important. I mean, we look at it in all of our patients.
Right.
And it's surprising how often people are low. When you wouldn't know it, and they're outside all the time. It's middle of the summer and you're still low. But it is important at the time of surgery, so prepping them. So the earlier you can start with that prior to surgery, the better.
Right.
And so therefore, I would think with injury too. So when you're talking about, you know, injury, so if somebody's young and healthy and they have an injury, what kind of time frame are you talking about with that? And during that time frame, you know, what are you doing? If they're young and healthy, in their, you know, not even maybe hormones not being an issue, what would your first approach be as far as what they can do at home to help with that healing process for you? And then what do you add to that when you're, that's probably pretty broad, because again, I will say that Dr. Spencer is a top elbow and shoulder surgery. So even if we're to talk maybe more elbow and shoulder and get more specific, because you have somebody, you know, playing tennis and, you know, they're injured and they come to you. What are your first approaches with them?
Well, so the low-hanging fruit for orthopedics is going to be rest, ice, elevation, that sort of thing. So ice is going to decrease inflammation. But I think that what we're wanting to get to is what's the next level for these patients, because if it's an ankle injury, the rehab's going to be a little bit different. If it's a shoulder injury, it's going to be a little bit different. But in general, the inflammatory process starts and goes for about 2 weeks or so, and then we kind of want to get rid of that inflammatory process. And so that's where taking anti-inflammatories is important. But that's also where getting that high-protein diet to get the nutrition in there is going to be super important as well. So there are things that can drive that, like taking BCAAs at night is an important thing to do if you're recovering. So that allows you to build more protein or build more muscle without that extra fat there. And so there are things like that that you can do that I think makes a difference. But it just really depends on the injury, whether you're going to mobilize it for a while, whether you're going to move it passively, whether you're going to do active assisted motion, all that stuff.
And so when they're actually in that healing process, and if they actually are of an age where you're thinking maybe hormones are involved, because obviously if we start talking about hormones in the body, you know, there's a huge healing component to hormones. And as you get older, even just from, you know, a logical standpoint, as we get older, we downhill as well. So you get an older patient and that healing's an issue. Then, like, how do you approach telling a patient that you think, you know, this is going to be some healing and they may need hormones? How does that happen? Because those are conversations, I think, that are becoming more common.
I think it is a little bit more common now for people to ask about that. It's certainly more common for me to approach that. So it really depends on the patient and how much they want to improve themselves. So asking a patient, like if someone comes in, say Bill off the street comes in, he's probably not going to know what his testosterone level is, right? But it's important. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's important from a healing standpoint. So I kind of get a feel for the patient and see how much they're wanting to drive this to get better to kind of the next level type of deal, you know? And if they are, that's when I talk to them about, hey, you may want to get your testosterone level checked. It's an important part of healing.
It's interesting because I think that, so another, like, so Dr. Spencer and I actually ended up together when it came to this, you know, injury and even peri and preoperative and even postoperative is, you know, peptides and hormones. And so he refers a lot of patients over now because we have started doing some work together. And I think probably looking at that in more depth over time, you know, whether they're getting better faster, what you're seeing with it. But I think it's become so clear to me that some of them, because I was just thinking we're adding peptides at first, but so frequently they're not on hormones either. So we're addressing that with them. And so I know it's easy once they get to us, but I wasn't sure how easy that is to talk to, you know, the patients about in the office. And sometimes they actually don't consider testosterone a med. So sometimes you don't even see it. And then when you ask them, they actually are on testosterone, you know, which is healing. But anyhow, so
sometimes you can tell and you just ask them, you know, where do you keep your testosterone level and how are you doing that? Is it injectable every day and how they're administering it? Mm-hmm. But then those are the ones that you definitely can talk to about next level stuff, like introducing peptides, if that's something that they're interested in.
So for us, once they testosterone, you know, is, and we tried to do just kind of some peptides and Edwin had kind of, you know, redirected us appropriately. So, cause we do, you know, look at things comprehensively once we're here, but then we are almost thinking about peptides and healing at first, but then so many of them weren't actually optimized on hormones too. And so as you look at hormones and the anabolic effects, testosterone, it's huge.
Yeah.
And it actually decreases when you're injured, you know, cause it's that stress on the body. And so that's, you know, even worse for testosterone in the healing that's needed. But even, you know, growth hormone, you know, and we'll get into peptides after. But so anyhow, so you're at least approaching that because I know you send a lot over.
Yeah.
For that alone, just that hormone component and then the peptides. And then that's where we started talking a little bit more about everything else and vitamin C and vitamin D and nutrition.
It makes a lot of sense afterwards.
Yeah. So when you get over to the fact that they have to have surgery, you know, because some of them are coming with that. Talk a little bit about that prep immediately prior to surgery and leading up to, like, you know, are there dietary changes that you want to do leading up to that?
Yeah.
Even including that protein intake, and does it change pre and a little bit post, or?
So in talking about what we do preoperatively, what I'd love for patients to do is be on that high protein diet, which is like 1.2 to 1.5 grams per kilogram, 1 week prior, and then at least 6 weeks afterwards. And then this is going, in doing the research with other, looking at other general surgery studies, the BCAAs, if you take that, if you take 15 grams of BCAAs about an hour before you go to bed, not only does that help you lose weight because you're taking in the protein, you're getting the leucine that actually makes you make more muscle cells. Not more muscle cells. Makes you hypertrophy the muscle cells. It makes them get stronger and it increases the blood flow. And there's other things like hydroxymethylbutyrate that you can take, which also allows you to build lean muscle mass. And so those are all things that you can do beforehand that prep you up. And then the carb loading, we talked about that last time.
We just briefly touched on it last time.
It actually is really important. They do that in especially abdominal surgery. They carb load beforehand because if you think about it, you know, we starve these patients, right? So we ask them not to eat after midnight. And then most of the time, you're taking narcotics, you may be a little nauseated with the narcotics. Your nutritional status may not be very good afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. And if we starve them beforehand, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And so if we give them a carb load beforehand and you're able to make those glycogen stores better before surgery.
Or even sustain.
Then you don't lose as much muscle mass afterwards. We talked about the case for the total knees where you lose about 10% of that muscle mass within the first week. That's the last thing we want to do. We want people having enough muscle mass so that they can actually start using that extremity, using moving it, doing active assisted range of motion, and assisting in their ability to heal.
Well, and I think that during that first 24 hours, their decreased VO intake, even if it was like an orthopedic injury and it's not abdominal, you know, or they're not malnourished to begin with. So you're going to drop glycogen stores pretty quickly. And then that muscle loss follows. So carb loading and then increased protein. And after, but carb loading up to the time of surgery, right?
And I tell you what, the other thing we talked about.
Well, no, I guess technically you got to be NPO.
Yeah, NPO after midnight, but then the carb loading before that. But arginine as well as vitamin D are two immunomodulators that if you can have the arginine in the protein that you're taking, that has been shown to decrease infection in addition to the vitamin D. So those are things that are super important. And that's the other low-hanging fruit that you have to do is all the diabetics have to have their blood glucose level under control, right?
Mm-hmm.
can't be smoking. Those are two things you have to do. And then you have to optimize your medications as well. So those are things. And then you get the nutritional thing that we're talking about right now. If you really want to go that next level, that's when we send them over to you to look at testosterone levels, to look at possibly using BPC-157, peptides, TB-500, maybe even mixing that up with CJC-1295 or other growth hormone regulating peptides. And so that's the next stuff where we come over to you and say, all right, here's a patient, try to optimize them so that once they go through surgery, they'll continue on some of those peptides and heal even faster. Because I was super impressed with the information that's out there on BP-157 on how quickly they get patients to heal. The angiogenesis, the blood vessel formation that it happens to, that that it creates.
It's one of my favorite.
Yeah, like the fibroblast growth factor that it stimulates. Yeah.
Yeah, and it actually increases, you know, as you've seen and heard, like it increases your growth hormone receptor, so upregulates. So if you're on CJC and increasing growth hormone, obviously, then that helps get the growth hormone, you know, effects in the body. But I love BPC for healing because I feel like it, again, provides – it allows inflammation, but not too much inflammation. So you get that swelling post-surgery or even post-injury that impedes your ability to move the joint. So impedes your healing. But if you can control that inflammation, it seems like they can, again, mobilize a little faster, you know, less muscle loss potentially, but less pain. You know,
less pain. I think the decrease in the muscle loss that occurs when you have a high protein diet, the amino acid supplementation, is critical. Because whether it's a shoulder replacement, rotator cuff repair, knee replacement, anything like that, you're going to start losing muscle mass. If we can combat that, you're going to recover so much more quickly. So much more quickly.
So when we're talking about muscle, and we'll do more of this over time, but I think that, like, for me, as I started to, you know, prepare for these podcasts in this series, you know, I have not looked at muscle and muscle formation and, you know, the effects on it, but, like, again, protein intake, nitrogen retention, that ability to synthesize proteins and not break them down is hugely related to diet and dietary intake of protein. And again, more important than ever when you have an injury or surgery, right? And so I have not looked at that nitrogen retention protein synthesis in a while, but I'd love to get more into that at some point where we're talking about, like, more detailed. Because I think a lot of people that are listening to the podcast are looking for deeper dives into the science behind, you know, some nitrogen and muscle building and retention and healing in the process. Because I think so many of us get injured as we get older, and just keeping the body almost primed to not get injured.
Right. So let me ask you this then. Is there a role? So as we approach... Well, we're middle-aged and approaching middle-age. We're middle-aged.
We're past that. Right, we're there.
So... working out, I mean, you're creating, when you work out, you injure the muscles. It's the process of the rest afterwards where you actually get an increase in the myofibrils. It's the reparative process that makes the muscles stronger. We don't get any more muscle cells. They just happen to get more myofibrils in them. They hypertrophy. That reparative process, do you think something like BPC-157 is something that people should be taking intermittently if they're going to work out because there's repeated injuries?
I think that still the core is hormones. So I still think optimizing hormones in both men and women, in testosterone optimization, because that's anabolic. So I think, again, then you're looking at growth hormone for anabolic stuff. And again, when you're talking about synthesis or hypertrophy, it's not that you're building new muscles, but you're definitely increasing size and growth. And anabolic means we're building, not necessarily in some unnatural way, but test in growth hormone, but definitely test. I think BPC is, like, I almost consider testosterone with the addition of CJC and then BPC almost an executive type function, like even from a brain function standpoint, because if you have the ability to be on and you can definitely stack hormones, you have the core of hormones or stack peptides, you have core hormones, and then you have CJC, which is also peaks in the early 20s and then goes down. So now you're optimizing test and growth hormone, and BPC is increasing, you know, they kind of work together, right? So right. CJC, which is increasing your growth hormone, and that's what I mean by increasing that, then you're also increasing receptor sensitivity to growth hormone in the brain and otherwise, but also you need to increase the androgenic effects by having growth hormone. It makes your test work better. So like that CJC component. So I think if you can do all three, it's great because you can stack peptides and then you're going to decrease your injury, your risk of injury, and keep your body almost functioning optimally at a younger age or younger performance level, I guess, into like the middle age and beyond. And I think that we don't think about the testosterone as often. And so sometimes they'll want to just do a BPC or CJC, but I think PORS test next, if you wanted to do BPC, but executive is almost like all three.
So you would consider, like, if your testosterone level is less than 400, that's going to be the number one thing that you do. And then number two, you're starting to add these other peptides. Are there downs?
I think it's actually kind of like testosterone level combined with symptoms too.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're having joint aches and pains or they're not recovering. So frequently what I hear is I'm just not recovering after a workout. Like that is a frequent complaint.
Right.
For both men and women.
Sleep.
Sleep.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not, and
obviously
it's not
sex
all,
drive. That's usually the last thing, but I mean.
Last thing for men can be the first thing for women, but last thing for men. But I feel like a lot of them will come in just saying like, I used to work out all the time. It's the used to syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work out all the time and I would recover a lot faster than I do now. It takes me days now.
And there's brain fog. There's all kinds of stuff that gets better. So for my patients, if I have them do all the stuff preoperatively, the nutrition stuff, they're taking the supplements and they still want to do that next level. And you're telling them about BPC 157 or other, maybe TB 500, something else that's a reparative recovery peptide. Are there downsides to that? How long can you take that? What's the recommended length of time that you would take that?
So if you're looking at recovery peptides, I still think TB 500 or TB 4, which used to be used a lot more, those are anti-inflammatory. So you're talking about that inflammatory phase, you know, so acute injury, acute surgery, you're adding it back in or like perioperatively. I think BPC you can take indefinitely if you wanted to. You know, it's not a drug, it's a peptide giving the body back a healing ability that it has lost, and it doesn't interact with meds. You can be on that longer.
It doesn't seem like there's any specific interaction with BP 157. It's not associated. It's not like it's a growth hormone or growth hormone releasing peptide where there's a or growth hormone where there's a negative
where you
feedback
have that potential of affecting so many other hormones too.
Right. So it just seems like it affects so many things, even in the gut. It almost seems to be like a miracle peptide that you'd want to put in the water and it just helps you heal. But that's the question.
It's
how long can you stay on that? Are there any negative effects? Is it carcinogenic? It proves our ability for cells to divide and repair. So is there any risk of cancer? If you've got a cancer cell, is that going to make that go crazy?
So it doesn't have any effect on that. You know, there's not been any studies. Obviously, there's limited long-term studies on a lot of the peptides, but honestly, it is one of those that you can be on indefinitely. It doesn't interact with drugs. It's not, it doesn't have an interaction, doesn't have, you know, adverse effects that we have seen in studies. And so in my peptide training, which I did a lot with Dr. Seeds, you know, in different venues, I guess. So again, indefinitely without any issues that I have yet to see. And not in just in my practice, but in the studies that I've seen.
So just another question, because I briefly talked to my patients about this, and that's why I sent them over to you, because you're the expert here. For something like CJC 1295 or Ipamorlin, which are growth hormone releasing peptides, are those ones that you pulse? Are you on them for a short period of time, long period of time? And you alluded to it again with the use of the BPC 157 and the two uplating regulators for each other and working synergistically.
But like, I definitely think they're synergistic. I think CJC is one that you do need to cycle on and off, whether you're doing that on a monthly basis, where a lot of times we're doing, you know, a certain amount of days per week and on and off. And then also, but some people will do it, they'll be on it solid for 3 months and come off of it for a month. You know, I think your biggest strides are 3 to 6 months for that, and you should stay on it for 6 months. If you wanted to come off of it, great. I think you definitely need to cycle CJC. Any growth hormone releasing peptides, you do. That's my opinion in BPC indefinitely, and I don't think you need to cycle BPC.
Do you still retain that growth hormone feedback loop when you're taking the peptide?
You are going to, like, potentially, if you take growth hormone, it's a prolonged half-life. And so obviously you have those effects for a prolonged period of time, and you're shutting down a system where this, you're stimulating your own release of growth hormone.
Right.
And then you're not down-regulating if you're going to cycle on and off.
Right.
And so you'll still have that negative feedback when you need it. Or when you don't need it, you know, so you're basically not shutting down a cycle and it'll function normally, unless if you're on it and then you're stimulating it.
So taking a growth hormone would be, if you were to take a growth hormone, that completely shuts down the pituitary axis. You're supplanting everything with your own growth hormone. This just stimulates the pituitary to release more growth hormone. Mm-hmm. So you still maintain that negative feedback. Yeah. So it's actually a healthy thing to do.
And I think, you know, going into those peptides like the growth hormone one, you know, separate, and maybe even a BPC, because it kind of, I think that people are seeking that information solely on it. But yeah, I think we sit back down and we talk some more about the different peptides and healing, and we'll talk more in depth about those questions specifically. So again, Dr. Spencer has been fabulous with patients. He sends them over. They love him. He's very science-based. He's always into research, much smarter than I am, looking at all the details, and comes in with all that information. And I'm probably more of a practical than I am, like, deep diving into all the, you know, relative risk, absolute risk. But that's what we brought him on for. So we're going to talk a little bit more over time about different aspects of healing and healing faster. So thank you for being on today, and we'll look forward to the next one.